the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site. That covers, of course, the Arizona Cardinals. This is episode 502 as we have our second preview show of the week. In week 17 as the Arizona Cardinals take on the Philadelphia Eagles on New Year's Eve, 1 p.m. at Lincoln Financial Field. It is the return of Jonathan Gannon and Nick Rawls to Philadelphia, a place where Gannon is not greatly loved these days. It hasn't been for almost a year. And to talk about this matchup, this is the opponent preview show for the week, and I've got Glenn Irby, a friend of the show who's been on the show a couple times for the yearly opponent preview. Glenn Irby, the managing editor for the Eagles Wire, our sister site that covers the Philadelphia Eagles. Glenn, welcome back to the show. I hope you've had a happy holidays and that you're fired up for what the Eagles expect to be a playoff run, because the Cardinals, we're just looking at draft status right now.
Just good morning. Yeah, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. We're ecstatic, happy to welcome Jonathan Gannon back. You know, guys are hoping to drop a good 30, 40 on your team. So, you know, all is love.
Yeah, well, the truth is it shouldn't take too much. The Cardinals gave up 27 to the Bears, 45 to the 49ers. They did only allow 10 to the Steelers, but the Steelers have a terrible offense. They gave up 37 to the Rams. They gave up 31 to the Ravens. We've been giving up points. There have been three different players this year who have earned Offensive Player of the Week after facing the Cardinals this year. So it's, you know, dropping 30 would, I think, would be kind of par for the course. So let's start with the Jonathan Gannon thing, because now granted, this ends up being, because we do kind of a written form of some of this stuff, so we get to talk about more. But I did ask this in our Behind Enemy Lines piece. What are the feelings towards Jonathan Gannon? Because it like, from an outside perspective, it feels like that they are that Eagles fans and perhaps the media have taken the opportunity over the last 9 months to use Gannon as a bit of a scapegoat, that they got beat by the Chiefs and Mahomes, which Mahomes tends to do that to most people he plays. He leaves and go back to the combine. The Philly reporters aren't talking about the draft. They're peppering him with questions about the Super Bowl. What is the feeling about Jonathan Gannon and the performance leading up to the Super Bowl, his departure, and since then?
Well, I think the big, I guess the most aggression stems from the fact that they were ill-prepared in the Super Bowl. So, I mean, they struggled to deal with the motion. The Chiefs scored twice on the same play. And so, you know, you have that disappointment and then you go home and he's not on the plane going home. And then you find out, okay, well, he's staying to interview with the Cardinals and he's already had conversations with them. So I think it's a situation where I'm sure he was locked in for that Super Bowl. I'm sure he did all the proper preparation, but it's just simply wasn't a good look with the way those guys dealt with the motion. It wasn't a good look with no one knowing, you know, he wasn't going home and he didn't have a conversation with the Cardinals. And then I think the idea is, okay, well, you fast forward 9 months later, Eagles defense is just as bad as the Cardinals defense. And then you have the situation where I think if he handles it correctly, they're able to keep Vic Fangio, because Vic Fangio was on the staff for about 2 or 3 weeks in a consulting role. That's the guy they wanted. If everything's handled correctly, we're sitting here maybe giving Jonathan Gannon a standing ovation or some type of video tribute, because his defense in Philadelphia was really good for 2 years. But I think the way it happened, you have Fangio in Miami. His Dolphins defense is outstanding. They're about to, you know, go on the playoff run. And then you have this, you know, this dumpster fire of a defense here in Philadelphia. And so it leads to bad feelings and contention and all those other things.
Well, one thing that I noticed is even last year, there was the talk that, you know, Gannon should have been getting more out of the defense than he got, you know, that he was basically benefiting from the extreme talent that they had at all levels of the football. But then you go to this year and largely the same person. Obviously, the linebackers are different this year, but largely the defensive line talent, the edge talent, the defensive back talent is roughly the same last year, and it's much different. Is there a change now in the opinion of the thought of how Gannon is viewed as a coordinator? Because I know there were, I can't remember if I was talking to you or talking to someone else, and maybe it was in the preview show before the season, that people thought that Gannon should have gotten more out of the defense than he got.
It's not the prettiest system. So I think from the standpoint of producing pressure organically, you know, just four rushers, you know, not blitzing a lot, you know, trying to keep everything in front of you, you know, that way, I think, you know, that way of defense can be maddening for fans. So you had those moments where you had quarterbacks with 120 QBR and they're 33 or 35 against the Eagles, and Philadelphia may have won those games, but I think you had a situation where you're looking up and quarterbacks were shredding his defense. But as the season went on, you know, they led the league in sacks. Guys had a good idea of what they were doing or where they're supposed to be. And I think when you see him and he's not here anymore, you know, you maybe didn't like him, maybe you didn't like his approach, but you knew he had guys prepared and they knew where they were supposed to be and what they were supposed to do. So, you know, sacks are down, pass coverage is down this season. We could blame it on James Bradbury and maybe Darius Slay losing a step, but I don't think that's all that is.
So as we look at, so, and I want your take on this. I know what that's out there on that ESPN report about Eagles even more being upset with Gannon because he never mentioned. Now, granted, you know, the conversation that the impermissible contact that they had, that was honestly, from everything that we've heard from the Austin Fort side, from the Gannon side, it was really harmless because it wasn't like they had the job locked in already. And it was stupid. It was stupid by Austin Fort. And it was funny that we didn't hear anything about that until draft day. And it was like, there's a trade settling the tampering. Wait, what tampering? Then we didn't talk about that. But, what was I going to say? Do you think that the Eagles would have been that locked in with Fangio? Because from an outsider's perspective, I had heard from multiple people that he was basically a package deal with Sean Payton, and that the Eagles, I'm not the Eagles, but the Dolphins, they made their offer over the top to keep him from going with Payton to Denver. And so to hear that the Eagles are upset that they didn't keep Fangio, I kind of feel like that wasn't even the favorite anyway, because the all the reports that came out after the season were that Fangio was going to join Peyton, and then it was an upset that when he landed in Miami. And even after he had agreed to Miami, there was also the handshake deal with Miami that there was still the possibility he was going to Denver. And honestly, this week was the first that I heard about Philly even being in the picture.
I think only the parties involved know what happened or know what were going to happen. But I know you have the situation where they win the NFC title game. Gannon does another interview or two, doesn't necessarily do that interview with the Cardinals, comes back. They start preparation for the Super Bowl. He says, I'm not going anywhere. As a matter of fact, I'm sorry, he did those interviews prior to the NFC championship game, pulls up. You know, talks about gutting the 49ers. You know, when he talks to the media, he says, I'm here, blah, 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 blah. So only Sirianni and Fangio know if he was going to come here or not. But I think from everything they've said and everything Howie Roseman has said and other parties involved, the biggest disappointment or I think the biggest bit of contingency or the contention stems from losing out on Fangio on the strength of Gannon stating he wasn't leaving, he wasn't going anywhere. The next thing you know, he's not getting on the plane back to Philadelphia. So I think only those parties involved know, and maybe it's just Sirianni being, you know, a bit salty, because even this week when talking about Gannon, he still talks about how he respects Jonathan, their friends, da-da-da. He doesn't want to talk about it. So they might have missed on Fangio, and at that point they were just stuck, and who knows.
So the biggest off defensive metrics, points allowed, third down defense, red zone defense. Obviously, it was going to be unlikely to replicate the number of sacks that they had last year, but still the number of the three big metrics defensively, points, third down and red zone, Eagles are down significantly over what happened last year. What is the biggest reason other than a scheme change? Is it just that losing T.J. Edwards and Kaiser White, did they end up being that big, or is it just the natural point of new scheme, players a year older, especially you've got Slay and Bradbury both in their 30s, did the league come at them differently this year?
I think a little bit of everything. I think you have two cornerbacks who got a little bit older. Not necessarily that Kaiser White may not have necessarily been that big of a loss. I think you look forward now, T.J. Edwards going to Chicago is that big of a loss. So you have a GM or you have a regime that doesn't necessarily respect the linebacker position or how you're supposed to build a roster from that. So you have a situation when you have a lack of depth at linebacker, you have a lack of depth at the safety positions, you know, you could have upgraded some of your signings and free agency didn't hit. So I think you have a situation where it's all those things involved. You have a better schedule. You have a team that just went to the Super Bowl. So you're going to get everyone's best shot when they play you. So all those things are involved. Two new coordinators. I think everything's happening at once. And the fact that they're sitting there with, you know, the potential to have 11, 12, 13 wins says a lot about the organization, but I think it's just a lot going on at one time as well.
Offensively, still want very, very good. However, Jalen Hurts' numbers this year are, and I've heard through other channels that perhaps they aren't as happy with Hurts this year as they have been. What is your take on Hurts' season this year? Obviously, he hasn't been the otherworldly quarterback. He's turned the ball over more, but 35 total touchdowns between passing and rushing. He's closing in. I imagine he'll probably clear 4,000 passing yards. Is that really that bad a season, or was this a natural thing to happen after the type of season that he had last year?
Again, I think a little bit of both. I think, you know, the statistics are on par. I think if you take away the two losses from the Cowboys and the 49ers and he doesn't have the turnovers, you're probably still talking about a guy in the MVP race or a guy set to win his first MVP. So I think it's just, you know, even though him and Brian Johnson have had a relationship since he was a kid, this is their first time, you know, in the capacity of one guy being the coordinator, one guy being the quarterback. So I think you have that difficulty. You have some things going on with injuries and different things like that that we'll probably find out at the end of the year. But overall, I think he's had a solid season. Of course, he wasn't going to match the season he had last year. If he doesn't have the turnovers, if he's not leading the league in interceptions and things like that, I think it's a different narrative.
So what have been the biggest surprises so far this year? Obviously, you add DeAndre Swift to that backfield, and he's been fantastic. He's like, for fantasy purposes, he's had his touchdowns vultured away by Jalen Hurts. What is the number? My co-host told me in our preview yesterday that he's been stopped at the one like eight times this season or something like that.
Yeah, I think Jason Kelce made note of it, I think yesterday or the day before. But, every time it gets to the one-yard line, Kelce lets him know what's about to happen. And, you know, you're going to get that brotherly shove or the tush push.
Which, my take on that is that since the Eagles are really the only team that successfully run that place consistently, there are a number of people saying that play needs to be banned. I'm like, why? When only one team is doing it well. And it's, you've got a center in Kelce who's one of the best in the league, gets great leverage, incredibly quick off the ball. You've got Hurts who has the build for it and can squat like 8,000 pounds.
Correct.
So, I mean, it's really kind of unique to them. I haven't seen other teams have quite the same success. But going back to the question, what have been the biggest surprises for you positively, offensively and defensively?
From the offensive standpoint, I think a positive would probably be Swift. I mean, I think when you sign Rashad Penny and then you trade for Swift, and then you see a situation where Penny gets no carries, I thought, okay, you would assume that the earth is going to fall. So, you know, Swift hasn't had a 100-yard game since week three, but he's still fourth or fifth in the NFL in rushing. So I think from that standpoint, his ability to, you know, hit big plays, hit the one hole and go, and avoid injury from that standpoint. I think offensively, they're doing what they normally do. A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. I think, you know, Dallas Goedert missing those games slowed him down a bit. So I think from the standpoint of the offense, I think the biggest surprise is just their inefficiency or lack of efficiency on offense. I know that's not a positive. I think on defense, he slowed down some, but I think, you know, the early development of Jalen Carter, you know, Josh Sweat, those guys, how they played Sidney Brown in the secondary, you know, Kelee Ringo. So I think the biggest positive is this team may or not make it to the Super Bowl, but you have to be impressed with the young guys they have on defense and, you know, especially at cornerback in the secondary. And it's a situation where you may be able to move on from Bradbury or Slay a little bit earlier than you expected.
And that's one of the things you kind of have to do. Now saying that they might not make the Super Bowl, that doesn't mean they're still not definitely in the mix. I mean, especially now heading into the postseason, you never know what's going to happen there. I wouldn't expect Philly to look the same in a rematch of that game against San Francisco. Although San Francisco's offense is very, very hard to match up with, as the Cardinals know very, very keenly, as they got beat by them twice this season, gave up 35 and 45 points to them. Coming up next on the Rise Up Series podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's move on and talk about specifically the matchup between the Cardinals and the Eagles. That's coming up next on Rise Up Series. We're back on the Rise Up Series podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web, talking to Glenn Irby from the Eagles Wire. Glenn, let's talk about this game. Obviously, I don't think the Eagles and the Cardinals are on completely different levels when it comes to this game. However, this game is interesting in the fact that now things have gotten more interesting with the injury report because Kyler hasn't practiced this week. And while there doesn't seem to be the vibe that Kyler doesn't play, if he doesn't play, this is completely different conversation, completely. And we're recording this on a Friday morning, so the final injury reports won't come out till later today, and you're hearing this show on a Saturday or on a Sunday, and so obviously that is information you already know. That said, what are the matchups that you are looking forward to most in this game?
I think for me, just seeing how the Eagles' defensive line and that pass rush fares against the Cardinals, I think, you know, you talk about not playing down to the level of your team. So I think at this point, you know, those guys are rebuilding, they're retooling. It's a matchup that on both sides of the ball, Philadelphia should dominate in the trenches. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. I'm looking forward to seeing how they match up on the outside, Kyler Murray or not. You know, you want to see good cornerback play. You want to see good play from the defensive back. So from that standpoint, I'm just looking to see them play well. Like, I'm not even necessarily worrying about an upset. If that happens, then, you know, that's a totally different conversation. But I think from the standpoint, you just want to see guys start to play well, eliminate mistakes, and play with efficiency.
Now, the Cardinals, I don't know if you've looked at the stats numbers for the Cardinals over the last few weeks, but their top three receivers, well, they're top three on the depth chart. They're Hollywood Brown, Michael Wilson, who's a rookie, and Rondale Moore. Over the last 3 weeks, the production from those three equals 5 catches for 41 yards. They have gotten nothing from the receiver position. Yeah. You laugh at that. That's terrible.
That's the point, though. You want to see them. Like, you don't necessarily expect a blowout. You don't expect them to shut a team down. But you want to see them play better than the competition they're going to see. Yes. If you look up Sunday afternoon and we're going into the third quarter and the Cardinals are still converting third downs and making plays, that's a problem. And now we're really talking about a concern and what's going on with this team and what's going on with this coach.
The Eagles' run defense has a couple different numbers. So they're a top 10 defense in terms of yards allowed, but very middle of the pack in terms of yards per carry. What do you think about this rush defense? Because the Cardinals, granted, I will say this, I will definitely add the asterisk. The Cardinals have been able to run the ball on most teams. The Bears, who average up only 80 yards a game, the Cardinals rushed for over 90, and that was in a game that they were trailing 21-0. So they couldn't run the ball as much as they wanted to. They went against the number one rush defense in San Francisco against the 49ers, rolled up 234 yards. Granted, Javon Hargrave was not on the field. Eric Armstead was, so they were missing their two top defensive tackles. But the Cardinals can run the ball, and that is the thing that they do best offensively. What is the true story of the Eagles run defense? Is it top 10 because they are leading in games, or is it top 10 because they dominate up front?
A little bit of Both. I think sometimes, I mean, I think you can add that they're top 10 because, you know, teams, when they feel like they can't run, can pass. So I think it's a little bit of all those things. I think when Jordan Davis is feeling good, when he's on, they're really stout. You know, I think, you know, Jalen Carter as a rookie, he's starting to hit the wall. But I think, you know, when you have Jordan Davis, Fletcher Cox, Milton Williams, and those guys, and they're on and they're in sync, it's a really stout group. You know, I think you, some of the issue you have is where, you know, Zach Cunningham is not in the lineup. They've been better against the run. When he's in the lineup, he's expected to return. So I think it's a bit of dominance up front and solid linebacker play. That play dissipates in the passing game, but in terms of the rushing attack and stopping an opponent's rushing attack, you have those two big guys in the middle, and Zach Cunningham has been solid as a linebacker.
The Cardinals, their pass game has been centered around the tight end position and the running back. Trey McBride's had a big year. Elijah Higgins last couple of games. How do the Eagles defend the pass in terms of defending tight ends and running backs.
Big deficiency. They struggled in that. I think you'll see, depending on what the Cardinals do outside, I think you'll see situations where you'll see James Bradbury go from cornerback into the slot. I think you'll see situations where you'll see James Bradbury matched up on McBride because, you know, obviously he's the Cardinals' best offensive player. He's the best offensive pass catcher. So I think you'll see different looks. You'll see cornerbacks and safeties matched up on the tight end, more of the focus going on him, less of it going on outside. You know, I think you'll see zone and two safety looks on the back end.
The Cardinals haven't had a sack. Well, they've had one sack in the last four games, and that one sack was last week when they didn't actually hit the quarterback. Justin Fields ran out of bounds for no gain near Dennis Gardeck. How has been Philly's pass protection this year?
It's down. I mean, you'll still see, you know, when Pro Football Focus or others do their offensive line grades, you know, Philadelphia will still be number one or two. But I think in terms of, you know, Jordan Mailata's over the last 4 or 5 weeks has allowed an enormous amount of pressures. You know, you have Landon Dickerson out with a thumb injury, so Sua Opeta will be at left guard for him. So, you know, I think it's a situation where you've had guys bouncing in out of the lineup this year, especially on the offensive line. Cam Jurgens, second-year guy, natural center, moved over to right guard. He's been in and out of the lineup. So they've been solid, but teams have also been able to take advantage of them up front as well. So, again, it's a continued work in progress.
I'm going to ask this question that I asked for the written piece. And is there an area, because I don't think there is, and you might be able to argue one spot. Do you think that there's an area where the Eagles aren't better than the Cardinals at any part of the offense, defense, coaching? Is there any matchup, is there any part of the team where the Cardinals might have an advantage?
I think in terms of the McBride matchup against our linebackers and safety. So I think from that standpoint, if you can pass block up front, establish somewhat of a running game and feature him in the passing game, there's enough there to keep you guys in the game.
So I get the quarterback position, you know, Hurts is a level above Kyler Murray, though even with Kyler just playing at the level he's capable of, the two are even. You guys have the more talented running back in DeAndre. So James Collins having a fantastic year, but I think anyone would probably take Swift over Connor. The receiving core, no question. The Cardinals have a garbage receiving core right now. Tight end, you know, Dallas Goedert, far more accomplished is Trey McBride. I think McBride, if he gets to Goddard's level, we're in a great spot. Offensive line, the Cardinals, nope. The Eagles probably top them there. Defensive line, most certainly. The linebacker, when the Cardinals are playing their third, they lost Kaiser White for the season, then they lost Josh Woods for the season, so now down to Chris Barnes and a rookie. I think there's one area where I might be able to argue the Cardinals are better at. Maybe a kicker with Matt Prater. Maybe. But it's not like Jake Elliott's been bad this year.
Better than Jake Elliott? Jake Elliott's 3 NFC Special Teams Player of the Week awards.
I know, but granted, he gets to kick a lot more than Prater does.
He does.
That's what the area is like. I'm not saying that Elliott's bad by any means. I think that's the one area where maybe the Cardinals can compete with Prater. But Prater's who's he's had three misses this year, but two of them have been 55 and beyond. He's hit 8 50 plus. He's only kicked, and like, honestly, he's only had 18 field extra point attempts. He's only attempted 27 field goals. And so, yeah. But like, I think that's the one position where you can put like Prater versus Elliott and say, maybe Prater's better. Maybe. But yeah.
I'll take that.
All right. Coming next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, Sir Connor's Talk of the Web. Let's move on to the parts where we make picks and predict for this game. That's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, best of our Cardinals Talk on the Web, in the preview, in the prediction segment of our show. If you listen to the show before, you've heard what I predicted for this game on episode 501. But let's hear what Glenn has to say. How do you see this game playing out for the Cardinals and the Eagles on New Year's Eve?
I think it's the one time this year, maybe specifically because of Gannon and the defensive coordinator coming back. I think there's a situation where everyone will be locked in. I think they'll be focused. You know, they have a chance to win the NFC East, depending on what Dallas does with Detroit. So I think it's a situation where I think they'll actually be focused, efficient, locked in, and I think they'll probably play the best game they've played in the last 6 weeks.
Ooh. And I see this game in this is nothing against the Eagles, but seeing how they've been defensively over the last few weeks. I don't think the Cardinals are going to compete. Like, I don't think it's going to be a close game. I predict this is going to be a blowout, but the Cardinals actually look okay. But I have said over the last few weeks that if the Cardinals are going to F around and win a game, I could see them winning this one just because of the Gannon. Like, I think the Cardinals will be equally locked in for Gannon and Rawless with that familiarity piece. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think there's anything that the Cardinals are going to be able to do defensively that will slow. I mean, the Bears rolled up 250 yards rushing. Khalil Herbert and Justin Fields ran all over on the Cardinals. So between DeAndre Swift, Kenneth Gainwell, and Jalen Hurts, I'm expecting no less than 250 rushing yards from the Eagles in this game.
Yeah, but I mean, I'll give Gannon some credit for, I mean, he spent 2 years with Hurts, so if anyone knows how to attack him or that passing game or just the Eagles offense as a whole, it would be him and Rolla. So I think from that standpoint, you could see some different looks. You could see some looks where, you know, maybe he's thrown some looks at Hurts in practice that he wasn't necessarily comfortable with. So I think you'll see him switch some things up. And depending on how things go in the first half, this could be interesting.
I will say this. I would feel a little bit more comfortable if we hadn't lost almost all the talent on the defensive line. So the Cardinals, they have their four best defensive linemen. LJ Collier, done for the year. Carlos Watkins, done for the year. Leckie Fotu, he might come back this week. He's on IR currently, been designated to return. Jonathan Ledbetter, granted, you might not have heard of some of these players because they're not that great. Jonathan Ledbetter is one of their best defensive linemen. He injured his knee. He's going to be placed on injured reserve this week. Kaiser White's gone. And so of their front seven, and you know, their edge presence has been almost nothing the last several weeks. For 3 weeks, you and I had as many sacks as the Cardinals did as a team. So, you know, while I believe in the scheme of Gannon could cause problems, the talent's not there. So they might have the X's and O's, but they do not have the Joes to keep up. They don't have the horses in this game to keep up with that offense. With the exception, if somehow they can get a turnover or two, I don't think that Philly will. I don't think Philly will see much resistance defensively from the Cardinals. Now, do I think the Cardinals can move the ball on the Eagles? I do. I think that they'll be able to move the ball. I think Kyler will have one of his better games. And the one thing that the Cardinals do, they do protect the football pretty well. Since Kyler's return, they've only had four turnovers total in six games. And two of them came in two games. He threw a couple of interceptions against the 49ers. But he is careful of the football. The five games previous to his return, they had 10 turnovers in those five games leading up to it. So I believe the Cardinals will protect the football. I think they can reach the 20-point mark. I think the 20 to 25 range. But I think they're going to give up nearly 40. I've got this game 37-24 Eagles. So it is a game in which the Cardinals are blown out. Basically, it's a two-score win for Philadelphia, but the Cardinals they play pretty well offensively. They don't play well defensively. I just don't think that's something they're able to do right now with the talent. 250 plus yards on the ground for the Eagles. I think maybe they 37 points for me. That's 7 scores, right? And so I like that's, you know, they get 10, 12 drives in a game. Well, maybe 10 drives. That means they're stopped only a couple of times. 37-24 is my pick. How do you see this game playing out? What do you think the final score is going to be? And obviously, we will see this if you're reading Cards Wire, if you're reading Eagles Wire. You're also going to see these predictions in print on the websites.
I mean, it has a shootout feel. I would love for them to rush for 250-something plus yards. I just think at this point, you know, they're so pass happy. You know, a stout running game, you know, being aggressive, being physical up front could really put this game away and prevent any melodrama or anything like that. I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. I think they're going to air the ball out. They're going to do what they normally do. But I think they'll take over. They'll run the Cardinals down over time. And I see a 41-31 finish.
Ooh, but that gives the Cardinals the cover with that 10.5 point spread.
Correct.
That would be fantastic. I would be very happy with that. I mean, as happy as I could be with a 10-point loss. Who do you think that the big performers are going to be for Philly?
Well, I think A.J. Brown's had a rough week, and anytime he has a rough week, he usually responds. So I would look for him, Devontae Smith, and just that passing game to be the biggest performance on the day.
If we're looking at the betting lines, you got the A.J. Brown props at 80.5. I think that's a lock for the over. But, that could be a case where he puts up big numbers in the first half. So 80 is really tough. But I love Devontae Smith over 53.5. I think he's going to – honestly, I think he's going to give the Cardinals a lot of trouble because of his talent. DeAndre Swift. Oh, that's only at 68.5. I say hit that over. When I talk about this, so when the alternate totals come out, I would ladder Swift at over 68.5 and over 75, and I might be tempted to do over 100 based on what we've seen from the Cardinals rush defense, but turnovers. How do you think the turnover battle goes? Do you think there are multiple turnovers? Do you think the Eagles turn it over? Do you think the Cardinals turn it over?
I think both teams will turn the ball over. I think at this point, it's not a situation where Philadelphia's all of a sudden going to start protecting the ball. So whether it's a Jalen Hurts interception or a fumble, there's going to be a turnover on that side of the ball. And Philadelphia's not necessarily forcing or taking the ball away from people. So it'd be a situation where, you know, I guess because you have a bad personnel on the field, you could see some turnovers from the Cardinals' point of view. But I think the Eagles will certainly turn the ball over once or twice on Sunday.
All right. Anything else? So you can find Glenn Irby's work on Eagles Wire over there. He also runs one of the other sites. But for this week, we care about the Eagles Wire right now. Glenn's doing double work, managing a couple of sites. So, Glenn, thank you for your time. And that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Our next show will be after the new year with Seth and I talking about how this game goes. Again, Glenn Irby from the Eagles Wire. Check him out there. That's Glenn Irby. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Seaward podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.
Rise up! Team Red! Rise up! Team Red! Rise up! Team Red!